Blog Talk Radio.
Folks, it's Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, you know who it is. Tonight, the icon, the Tornado, Tony Tenniel.
We have a Rock'em Sock'em Robots radio show for you today. We got Mark the Hammer Coleman. He is like, you know, absolute legend of the sport. He's been around forever. His record is 16-10. Doesn't sound so foreboding, maybe. But if you watch the UFC the last few years, you've seen him fight. And basically, he's coming on to promote a new venture going on called MMA Adventure Company. And they actually have these big contests where they hook people up with these basically adventure packages with different fighters. And he's the October prize, so he's going to tell us about what his plan for the winter. And give us a little bit of an insight on what life is like after being in the UFC there. So we'll get to him later. I know I haven't seen any big live fights here in Vegas in a long time, but you got to see one in Philadelphia the other night, so give us a little after-action report on that.
Man, I got to see a hell of a card in Philadelphia. Dan's National Guard Armory, Northeast Philadelphia. It was the inaugural show for Dan Boxing Promotions. We were trying to get Brittany Rogers on our show tonight. Rich, as I told you before we went on the air, she got in Chicago this week. I guess she's taking a little vacay after her show last week.
She got a lot of good press.
What?
She got a lot of good press off that, by the way. I did read couple other websites had put out some stories, and I think she got an article in the Philadelphia paper before, right?
Well, she had an article in the Philadelphia Daily News by Bernard Fernandez, who is one of the premier boxing writers in the country. I know Bernard. I've talked to him, you know, with a couple of shows. I've been in email contact with him in the past. Bernard knows his boxing, so he did an article on her about a week before the show. It was in the Philadelphia Daily News, which, you know, obviously gets readership throughout the city. And that was a good promotion. But the most important thing about the show was that from top to bottom, it was an outstanding show. I mean, you had, mostly there were guys, you had a couple guys making pro debuts, had a couple guys that only had four or five fights. But it was quality from top to bottom. You got 8 bouts from there. Now, I was talking to my dad before we went down. I was like, yeah, they got 8 bouts set up. He goes, well, how many of them do you think will get canceled? You think, you know, we'll get all 8? And I didn't say anything. Now, there's another promoter in the Philadelphia area. I'm not going to say any names. But every one of his shows, I hate going to them anymore because they're all, to be completely honest, they're all clusterfucks. I've gone to his shows, and there have been fights that have been canceled. I went to one of his shows last year. There was supposed to be 8 fights. I think it was 4. I think they had a total of 15 rounds of boxing. And they were charging people, I got the cheaper seats. I paid $30. And some of the higher-end seats, they were charging people, $70, $80 for these higher-end seats. And you got 4 fights. None of them were really that good. And the main event was a 3-round knockout. It wasn't a good show. And it was just a mess. Fighters weren't getting paid. This guy's shows were terrible. I was said, I don't want to mention his name. I remember reading an interview with this girl, Brittany Rogers, and she was like, you know what? She was like, there's a very good chance I might take a loss on my first show. But she's like, I want to make sure that all the fighters get paid. I want to make sure that I do the best I can to put together an enjoyable card. That was an understatement. There was enthusiasm from the start. When I went to the other promoter's show and I went up to the front to get my ticket and get my press pass, it was like a chore for them to talk to me, give me my pass. When I went there and I was buying my ticket at this show, I remember saying to the one girl working the table, I said, hey, I'm also here with Fight News Unlimited, bring my camera in. And I was like, oh, you don't need pass to bring the camera in. I'm like, oh, it doesn't matter. I said, I said, I'll be ready to Fight News Unlimited. And they said, oh, she must have not put you on the list. But don't worry. Here you go. I'll put it up for you right now. She literally wrote me a press pass standing in line. It happened that quick. And I was like, you know what, that's pretty awesome. I went in there, they had a couple people set up a table, but it wasn't like these people were hired. They were personal friends of this girl, just there trying to help her speak. Everybody there was really nice, you walked in, you felt welcome, and it was, hey, how you doing? Thank you for coming out tonight. Hey, you want to buy a shirt? You want to buy a 50-50 drawing? And my dad went down there and got a shirt for my mom, But they were just so nice. So, as I said, I love going to local Philadelphia cards because it's always like a homecoming. I mean, I felt so good there. I've seen all these friends of mine. I was joking around. One of the young guys that I'm training now, him and his father came to the card, and it was the first time they've ever been there. So we're all hanging out. We're sitting up in the top row, good seats. We're watching it. And the first fight's going on, and it was a real competitive fight. The first little fighter, I don't have his name in front of me, but he won the first round clearly. And the other guy started chipping away at him and started, handling him over the next 5 rounds. And this kid, Jeff, and his father turned to me like, who do you think won that fight? And I said, well, I think it's, the fighter in the blue corner. And they said, we think he won too. But it was pretty close. I'm like, nah, I think he won 5 rounds to 1. It'll be 59-55. And the judges came out and they're like, and all 3 judges have a 59-55 in the blue corner. And I said, don't doubt the master here, guys. I said, come on. And we laughed about it. So then as we're sitting there and they're having a couple more fights on, this kid, Jeff, a few months ago, when he started training with me, had never watched a boxing match in his life. He was a UFC fan, so it kind of perplexed me why he wanted to start boxing, but he did. So, next thing I know, he's emailing me saying, hey, man, did you watch the fight tonight? Did you see so-and-so's fight? And I'm like, yeah, man. So, he knew that Hank Lundy was fighting that fight at ESPN a few months ago. And after it was over, he emailed me, he goes, was that your friend that fought tonight? I'm like, yeah, that was Hank Lundy. He goes, man, that knockout was, oh my God, that was so cool. So we're standing on the bleachers, down, right in front of us. I said, hey, Jeff, remember that really cool knockout we saw about 2 months ago on ESPN? Yeah, man, that was awesome. I said, well, there it goes, right there, hammering Hank Lundy. Really? And this kid's eyes were like wide as could be. And I, you know, after the fights are over, you know, we went down and I introduced him to a guy that he's a trainer, used to be out of, he's a train guy out of my old gym. So, you know, talking to him. So we were joking and talking about some of the old days. And, you know, like, you see, I'm saying, this kid, Jeff, has only ever seen me in a controlled environment, you know, that being the gym, where basically I could be blowing smoke with everybody's ass. I could sit there and have these guys in the gym saying, yeah, and I get this and I get that. Yeah, they can watch videos and everything, but I know this guy and I know that guy. Then when you get into a real environment and you're like, yeah, who are you? But he was down there seeing the people that I know. And, like, I introduced him to Aaron Ford. He trains guys down there. Aaron Ford, oh, my God, man, what's up? And I said, this is kid I'm training now. Aaron, come on, we got to bring him down from far. And I said, yeah, bring him down anytime. You know, we're laughing. I got to introduce him to Fast Eddie Chambers, who fought for the heavyweight championship of the world. We didn't get to, Simon Carr was there. He was around bothering people, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him, which is a shame. I didn't get a chance to talk to him playing Hank. I missed him. And then, you know, it was just, you know, having such a great time and, like, talking to people. And after the fight was over, I got to talk to Brittany Rogers, you know, whenever I gave her a hug. I told her how great the show was. And, you know, the poor girl, I mean, you could see she was exhausted. I mean, she, you could tell she was stressed out a lot. But I just thought, I said, you did a fantastic job. I mean, the show was great. It wasn't just great as a boxer's perspective. It was great as a fan's perspective. I mean, for a boxing fan, they were good fights. I mean, you go to these other cards and you get crap. I mean, you might have three fights, but you have guys that are 7-0 or 8-0, and they're fighting a guy that's 0-8, and it's over in 45 seconds. Or you have other fights that, you know, are just not entertaining. All these fights were, well, there was one fight that ended in 28 seconds, but the knockout was breathtaking. So there was nothing wrong with it. Well, what was also pretty cool was the one guy there. He's an amateur judge. He was actually at the amateurs. He was at the Nationals in 98. I think he voted for Jordan every year, by the way, but I'm not going to have that one. I can't tell you how many of my fights that he judged over the years. And he does a lot of writing for, you know, websites. I think he does some stuff for Ring Magazine, like covering local cards. His name's Jeff Talley. And for the first few years I was in Lockhaven, Jeff Jowett was not a big fan of mine. I mean, he was going against me in every fight. And I remember the Lockhaven home show back in 1996, I fought a kid by the name of Phil Small. Phil was a taller kid, and he was about a year or two older than me. He started to do really well with himself. And Phil and I went toe-to-toe, and it was a real close fight. And I won on a 3-2 split decision. And Jeff Jowett was one of the judges that voted against me. And I remember after the fight was over, they had a kid that was, well, not a kid, he's older than me, but he was a highly talented Philadelphia amateur that fought in the Olympic trials in 92, and then he was fighting as a pro, and then his career was on hiatus because of an elbow injury by the name of Mike Rafferty. And Mike was thinking about coming up to Lockhaven, not the box, obviously, because he'd already fought pro and had a lot of experience, but, just to go to school, and, you know, he was going to help out with the team and everything. So he was coming up that weekend, and Dr. Cox kind of made me his tour guide, being a Philadelphia guy. So, obviously, Jeff Jowett sees Mike Rafferty there, and he's like, talking to him, like, oh, my God, Mike, how you doing all this? And Mike said, man, did you see that handicap fight earlier? That was a great fight. He did really great that fight. And Jeff Jowett's like, man, I thought he lost that fight. I wasn't really that impressed. And Mike was like, what, are you kidding me? He goes, Little Marciano over there? You weren't impressed with Little Marciano? And that's what he was calling me. And I'm sitting there, like, almost blushing because he's saying it. Little Marciano, you're not impressed? And about a week later, I'm fighting at the Mansfield. And Jeff Jatlow said hi to me, and I was like, hey man, how you doing? I was like, okay, this is weird. The next year, it was because he was always saying hi to me at all the shows and everything. And as I was coming to journalism at the time, I was writing a paper for my one class. And I mentioned, he's like, would you send that to me? I would like to read that. Okay, that's kind of weird. Yeah, sure, I'll send it to you. Because now I talk to him at all the shows, and my dad always talks to him. When I introduced him to this kid, Jeff, I was like, does a lot of my fights. He goes, oh man, I guess I judge a lot of your fights. He goes, and every one of them was a war. I said, when did I start bleeding? Usually when we touch gloves, right? He goes, no, man, you always handle yourself real well. I said, yeah, I handle myself, but I bled a lot. I said, I make fights entertaining. If I had to give a little of my blood to do it, I would. And we were laughing about it, and I said, I'm teaching this kid Jeff here the art of defense. And Jeff out looked at me. I said, yeah, the art of defense is a good offense, because you always were an offensive fighter. And we laughed hysterical. So I got a real nice email from Jeff Jowett yesterday. I sent him a copy of, I sent him a link to the article I wrote for Fight News Unlimited. And he goes, dude, that was a great write-up. I really enjoyed it. He goes, I liked your comment about the one fighter coming in with no sweat and leaving with no sweat. And he goes, and you were good enough to pick it up that it was a double right hand that knocked him out. He goes, I read reports where guys missed that. I said, well, you got to give my trainee credit on that one. He goes, I was snapping a photo and I looked the other way. I missed it myself. But, man, you know, great card, Rich. Great card. I mean, like, from top to bottom, a lot of good prospects on the card. There was a kid from State College, PA. He was originally from Philly. He's fighting out of Penn State. And actually, he's good friends with a guy that I know from Lock Haven. Osaskino?
Yep.
Did I try to get you to get on the show?
Yep.
He's good friends with him. Because Os was writing on Facebook like how well he did. I'm like, dude, were you there? He's like, no, but I was getting phone reports. This kid, Grayson Blake, I mean, you want to talk about impressive? Rich, he stood right in front of the guy. Right in front of him, toe to toe, the guy couldn't hit him. He was selling punches, and this kid was just rolling them off and hitting them back. I said, and then he was throwing a feint out there to draw this guy Perez into throwing more punches. I mean, what are the best tactics right now? Like, say we're fighting, and I want to counter off your punches. I need you to punch. Well, say you're waiting to counter off me. And then we got a problem. We're both going to stand there and look at each other. So what a counterpuncher needs to do is use body movement and make guys punch, quote-unquote, counter off their movement. So, you know, I take a jab, you may try to counter with a right hand, I bait you into that, and then I counter you with a left hook or an uppercut or whatever. That's what this kid Grayson Blake was doing. I mean, he was, you know, doing feints, he was angled, and he was so smooth. I was like, God damn, does that guy look good. Then we got another guy on the card. They call him the new Ray Robinson, because his name is Ray Robinson. He's a tall, left-handed fighter, and he fought a kid, Manuel Guzman. Did not have a good record, but I've seen Manuel fight. He's a tough, tough, tough fighter. And Ray Robinson really looked impressive. You know, he was landing punches, opening up his long left hand. He was hitting up, you know, straight left uppercut, looping left, you name it, he hit him. And this poor Guzman was shrugging his shoulders, like, come on, I can take it. I said, I don't think you want to take too much of that. He stopped him in the seventh round. What was also, you know, pretty cool was this kid that I'm training, Jeff, right before we had the flood in my house, literally about 3 days beforehand, I wanted to really teach him about good, effective boxing and just using strategy out there. And I said, one of the best fights I've seen for that was the fight we just passed the 10-year anniversary of, Bernard Hopkins' 12th-round knockout over Felix Trinidad, because Hopkins boxed him well. You know, he set everything up. I said he used such, you know, a perfectly strategized game plan in there. So I had, burned a copy of it for this kid. And I gave him gave him the video, and he watched it. He enjoyed it. So now the second play of the night comes on, and Steve Smoker is the referee. My guy goes, boy, see that referee there? He's really a top-name guy. He's refereed title qualities. And I turned to him. I said, hey, Jeff, remember that video I gave you a few weeks ago? Yeah. I said, there's the referee. I said, that's all you got to say, Pop.
That's the guy when we were talking about referees a while ago. I remember you saying that he's your favorite referee.
Yeah, he is.
You wish that he was the other fight, right?
Excuse me?
And you wish he was the one that was reffing the Floyd Mayweather-Ortiz fight, right?
Yeah, you know, you're right. I did say that. Because here's the thing, I like Joe Cortez. He's always been fair but firm. But Joe, you could tell, is slipping a little bit, you know. He's made some bad calls in other fights. I remember fight maybe 2 or 3 years ago, one fighter, and I can't remember the name, I apologize, beat the hell out of another guy, and he, like, hit him with a shot, shattered the guy's nose, and then I think he might have, like, tapped him when the guy was on his knees. And they disqualified him. And it was like, come on. You know, you could tell, obviously, the guy was getting the crap kicked out of him and he was looking for a layout. But Joe's made some mistakes recently. I mean, he was a great referee. I think he's on the downside. Even a lot of other publications have said that. Class act individual, I'm making mistakes now. Steve Smoker, he is a offensive fighter's referee. You know, he'll let the guy fight in there. If there's a lot of clinching in there, you know, obviously he'll implore them to fight their way out of it. You know, if two guys are clinching and are really, like, bear hugging each other, yeah, he'll step in, great. But if two guys are, like, going in there, but they're doing action while they're doing it, you'll get more of, you know, you can work your way out. Keep fighting. And at the same time, protect yourself, you know? Joe made a mistake a few weeks ago during that last embrace, which turned into the knockout. He looked the other way when Floyd cracked him. Him and Ortiz were looking at each other. Nobody was looking at Floyd. Floyd's the one throwing the punches. That was a first of all, it was a big-time mistake on Ortiz's part. But also on the same wavelength, Cortez really was losing control of that fight.
Yeah, actually, it was kind of funny last night. I'm over here in Vegas actually doing the tourist thing now that I have a little bit of money from my mini settlement with the Zions case. So I was up at the Stratosphere here, the hotel that's pretty much the biggest, the tallest structure in Vegas. They got the hotel itself is not tall, but they have a tower that's attached to it, and people actually jump off of it. They have something called the sky jump, where they hook you in and you do like a controlled descent. It's not like a bungee jump, but sort of as cool or almost as cool as a bungee jump. But anyway, there's a bar at the top, and so I'm having a few drinks at the bar, and then, you know, next thing you know, I get into boxing conversation with the guy tending bar. Turns out he tells me he's Manny Pacquiao's personal bartender whenever he comes to Vegas. And not only that, but he has a friend who's the security guard there who is really good friends with Floyd Sr. So, you know, and he's you know, obviously for Floyd if, you know, that fight were to happen. And so the guy that was Manny's bartender told me he doesn't think it's going to happen. You know, it's just too many problems for both guys. You know, you got the lawsuit, you got Manny Pacquiao's mother apparently got down on her hands and knees and begged him not to box anymore. And he said that he wants to run for a higher political office next year. And, or at the end of next year, 2013, I think, is when it comes up. But anyway, so I said to him, everything that I've looked at seems to tell me that if it's going to happen at all, then it will definitely happen next year. You know, I think they will work it out eventually, but he was going back and forth too. The security guard ended up coming down and giving me his perspective on the whole fight with Floyd and his father and
told me all these stories about Floyd growing up and, you know, being a little toddler in the boxing gym. And he gave me some unique perspective that led me to maybe say, wait a second, you know, maybe I shouldn't be favoring Pacquiao in this fight. But, I don't know. I mean, obviously, we always love to talk about it because, you know, there's that imminent what if. Is it going to happen or not?
Of course.
I've said before that it's almost like if boxing has this fight, then everybody's going to be clueless about, like, you know, what to talk about next and what's the next fight. It's the hype itself sort of sells the sport, you know, because people are just waiting for this fight.
But you know what? When you look at it like this, okay, right now, I mean, boxing's still going through a tough time. The boxing's still alive. And I know boxing's still alive because I was sitting in a packed armory a few weeks ago, well, not a few weeks ago, last week. And there were, not just because of this girls' promotion, but because there were good fights on the show and people were cheering the fighters. Yeah, I mean, you can go to a show just to support somebody, like, you know, which, say you're putting on a, like a peewee football show or whatever, and you're trying to, you know, do it as a business. And you invite me. Yeah, I go to support, you know, and I'm like, yeah, you know, kids, whatever. But there was legitimate, enthusiasm for these fights. So people were there cheering the fighters on, there was a lot of excitement for that. So, boxing still has its fans out there. And right now, yeah, the big talk is Pacquiao Mayweather. But, okay, say it happens. And no matter who wins, whether Pacquiao wins, whether Mayweather wins, I'm sure that, I mean, something else. I mean, it might take some time for the hype engine to, you know, regenerate itself, but the hype engine will start up again for something else. I remember a couple years ago, it was Mayweather and De La Hoya. There was a lot of hype around that one, even for a couple of years before the fight even happened. I mean, you had De La Hoya and Mosley, you had De La Hoya and Hopkins. There was a lot of hype, you know, and it got regular, armchair fans talking. So now you look at the way, I mean, there are some good fighters out there. I'm telling you a fight right now. You want to see a good fight, Rich? About a month from now, I think it's going to be on HBO. James Kirkland and, Alfredo Angulo. That's going to be a fight that has potential of explosives.
Right.
If you look at it like this, you got James Kirkland. I mean, he was, undefeated before he had a prison stint for about like a year, year and a half. Then he got sent away. Then he came back and he suffered his first defeat. He got stopped in the first round. It was an upset, though. It was a situation of a guy that got caught cold in the first round, didn't recover, got dropped a few more times, fight gets stopped. Kirkland's still a badass fighter. He's left-handed, he's short, he's very aggressive. Now you have Angulo. He is the fighter that, violently knocked out Harry Yorgi a couple years ago. And we know Harry's a good fighter. I mean, he destroyed Harry. He's also going toe-to-toe with guys like Kermit Tintan. Not that a good fighter by the name of Gabriel Rosado, who I know. Angulo is a power puncher. He gets the straight-ahead power puncher. These two guys are going to fight, and basically what it's going to be, Rich, is you can put them in a bathroom, because that's about all the space they're going to need. And you're just going to draw a line in the middle of that, and the two guys are going to stand on the line, like Rock'em Sock'em Robots, and the guy that backs up first loses. That's what it's going to be. But no, you're, as I was saying, you're going to get hype on, like, different fights. I mean, you got good fighters out there. I mean, unfortunately, some of them are in the smaller weight classes right now, where a lot of times people like to talk about the heavyweight division. And the heavyweight division, frankly, right now, is not interesting.
Well, I think because I mean, put up Pacquiao and Mayweather now, and
But even if Pacquiao and Mayweather heavyweight, so holy shit, that would be amazing. But right now, I mean, you got the Klitschko's, you know, and they're almost like the... Maybe because they're not American. Maybe because you don't see their fights broadcast on TV as much, or during busy times during the day, or because they've been so dominant. I don't know. But And speaking of Klitschko, they declined to fight out Vladimir Klitschko, who's going to fight Jean-Marc Mournet, who was a former cruiserweight champion who's been pretty much irrelevant for about the past 6 years. I don't know where this fight's coming from, but it's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. This fight, you know, doesn't stir my juices. Right now, there isn't a heavyweight fight that would stir my juices. Hadamack got, you know, pretty much thoroughly stumped,
as I expected he would. I'm trying to think of who are fans out there. Boxing and the world peace.
Yeah, I mean, David Haye fought like shit. I mean, so the two biggest threats you just had both came up small. So, now, I mean, you gotta, I mean, and you know what? He could be an amateur right now. We don't know, but somewhere right now, there could be a kid up in the Prompt Gym right now in Detroit, busting his ass. He could be maybe 6'4", 228 pounds, missile right hand, snapping jab, good chin. You don't know. Rick Bell could be out there. Rick Bell is a hell of a heavyweight fighter. The next Evander Holyfield could be out there. They could be just in the gym right now as an amateur.
Yep.
Hopefully we'll see him sooner than later. Because what's going to happen is you're going to see this kid and everybody's going to say, the next Mike Tyson could be out there. Imagine, remember the excitement? Mike Tyson fighting. It seems like when he was starting out, he was fighting every 3 weeks. Because his fights were only going about 48 seconds. Oh my God, Mike Tyson's going to be fighting again. We got to watch. You know what, Rich? No, let's not go out for beers tonight. Let's wait till the Tyson fight's over. It's only going to go around. Then we'll go out. And then you know what happens there? I'm getting a little fired up tonight, and you're getting me on a good night. But you're gonna watch this fight, you know? And you're getting there because Mike Tyson's fighting on ESPN tonight. He's starting out his career. He's a next big thing. You're excited about it. You know, you're gonna watch Tyson fight this main event. It's only gonna go around. So, you know what? But you gotta wait till, you know, the card starts at 9. So, alright, let me see. Okay, hammering Hank Lundy kid's on, you know? Next thing you know, he's in a Rock'em Sock'em Robot fight. He knocks the guy out. The guy's shooting the blood. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing that Hank Lundy fight again. He was pretty cool. Okay, we got this other kid. We got this Alfredo Angulo with a fight. You know, since Lundy's fight ended early, we still got time for the Tyson fight. We got this Angulo kid. He knocks the guy out. Well, man, this Angulo's pretty cool. I'd love to watch them again. That's how it all starts. That's why I hate the fact that you don't have USA fights anymore. They got rid of them in 1998 because look at all the guys you saw up and coming on, you know, USA's Tuesday fights. I mean, you had guys like Arturo Gatti, Vinny Pazienza, Ray Mercer, Riddick Bowe. I mean, really good, exciting fighters. Mickey Ward was on there. Tommy Gunn? Tommy Gunn was on there, absolutely. But you know, the thing about it, you knew when the show was going to be. You knew every Tuesday at 9 o'clock, you could tune in and you were getting 2 hours of good box with some established veterans, yes. But you were also getting some young up-and-coming fighters. You were going to places like the Blue Horizon. You were going to places like the,
Even the fights they have on Versus were pretty good. I'd like to see them do
that. But here's the problem, right? You know, you gotta set a pattern of viewership. Now, growing up, I knew Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, I was watching the fights. See, now it's like, oh, there's a Versus card on. But half the time, you don't get a pattern. You don't know it's going to be every Friday night at a certain time. Even ESPN2 boxing, they only run it from January through August. So you have, you know, 9 months out of the year, you get some fights on. But the problem with that is, come January, you're so conditioned because you have not watched boxing on Friday nights for 4 months. You missed the first 2 shows. There's no shit for a fight for. I forgot. And then they changed the times. Well, we got the Westminster Dog Show on, and everybody in the world wants to watch this little shih tzu run around with the poop on the carpet. You know, so we're going to preempt the boxing show, and we're going to wait until, you know, Fluffy over here is done taking a leak. So, is it starting at 9 o'clock? No, it's starting at 10 this week. Okay, this week it's starting at 8 because, you know, we got table tennis from Bulgaria on at 10:30. And we got to make sure that, you know, you have a prime spot for table tennis from outer Bulgaria.
Did you take comedy lessons before the show?
Why? Am I funny tonight?
You need to quit your day job with this shit.
But no, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, you don't get a pattern up there. Like, there are times like, I'm like, oh, shit. It's like, oh, during the summer. Say I got to work on a Saturday. I got to be up at, like, you know, 6 a.m. or whatever. And the flights aren't starting until 8 o'clock at night. Or not 8 o'clock, I'm sorry, 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, well, damn, I don't want to be up till 1 watching the flights knowing I got to be up at 6 tomorrow morning and go to work. That sucks. So you don't get that pattern of viewership. And there are good fighters on ESPN. There have been a lot of really good fights on ESPN. But unfortunately, they're not playing to as big an audience as USA's Tuesday Night Fights or ESPN Thursday Night Fights, which you knew every Thursday at 8 o'clock you were getting a fight card. You knew it. I mean, I think they really need to get back into that. I mean, you give boxing, you know, which is a lot of boxing fans still out there. And you know what? I went to that local card last week. A lot of people think, oh, well, you know, boxing's like, you have an older generation there. That ain't true. There were a lot of young people there. I mean, there were some kids there that were really getting into it. I had a teenager, you know, Jeff, that, you know, came, you know, as part of my group. But you had young people there. I mean, and you had guys and girls there. I mean, so don't let people say that it's male-dominated and it's, you know, all old people that are not UFC fans or mixed martial arts fans. It ain't true. Boxing still has a lot of popularity, and it has a mix. I mean, I go to a lot of fights in the local area, and I see a lot of girls there. Some are there with their boyfriends, but a lot of them are in the fights. I mean, I got one come up and talk to me saying, hey, I see that you're writing a report on this. You know, what do you think of this card? I see you have a boxing jacket on. Who do you know? Do you know any of these guys? And I always give them one of my cards to the site. They're cute. I tell them to send in some bikini photos to Rich Bergeron. I mean, if you give a good product, you will sell, you know. I mean, this other promoter that I've been busted on the whole show, his fights generally don't draw because people are like, you know what? I ain't wasting my time and my money on this guy's crap fest. Michelle Brittany Rogers, I give her 2 thumbs up because, you know, she did a hell of a job. And she put out a fight. You could tell she was a fan because she put out a fight that the boxing fans would want to see. And she learned from Russell Peltz. You know, Russell Peltz is a Hall of Fame promoter for a reason. And Russell Peltz, a lot of times, you know, would take some flack because, you know, he would put his own fighters in tough fights that they had a chance to get beaten. You know, he didn't protect his guys. I mean, he would take his fighters on UFC's Tuesday Night Fights from the Blue Horizon, and you had Russell Peltz's main event guy. Wasn't guaranteed to win that fight. You know, it was, you know, he had to fight. He had to fight for it. But in the end, it made his fighters better fighters. And in the end, it, you know, it made fans really respect, you know, what he was providing them.
Well, I know you're on a roll with the boxing, but I do want to at least mention some big UFC events, both one last weekend, last Saturday, and one this Saturday. Last Saturday was actually my birthday. It wasn't very eventful.
Happy birthday.
I hit the big 34, and this week was more of a celebration. I went to the Grand Canyon today, believe it or not.
Nice.
Over the Grand Canyon, at least, on the...
The Grand Canyon is such a Grand Canyon.
Yeah. It's, it was cool. I went on a helicopter tour out there, so it wasn't as crazy and wild as the first time I went on a helicopter with a Vietnam vet, a war hero, who was my scariest little kids when I was in junior ROTC on an encampment, but it's definitely more scenic, so made up for it. But anyway, enough about me. The UFC fights, we had UFC Live 6, Cruz versus Johnson was the main event. Dominic Cruz versus Demetrius Johnson. And I gotta admit, I mean, I love MMA, mixed martial arts, the whole deal, you know, but these little guys, I kinda hate watching them in MMA, you know. It's just, especially when it's a title fight like this where they go 5 rounds. And they were just back and forth the whole time. Like, was kind of keeping my eye on it, kind of not. But anyway, Dominic Cruz beat Demetrius Johnson to make a decision, unanimous decision. It went all five rounds. And then we had the co-main event was heavyweights, Stefan Struve versus Pat Barry. And Struve beat Barry by submission. Struve is a 7'4" guy, I think, or seven foot something, anyway. He's a tall dude. And Pat Barry is a short, stocky guy. And it went into the about the 3 minute, right past the 3 minute mark of the second round before the fight was ended by the submission. It was a triangle choke. And before that, Barry was actually pretty much doing the perfect defense for a tall guy. And getting on the feet was boxing mostly, rather than trying to, you know, take a freaking giant down to the ground. But somehow he ended up in this triangle choke. And that was all she wrote. He's done. A guy we had on the show before, Anthony Johnson, came out and just leveled Charlie Brenneman about halfway through the first round with a head kick. And Brenneman was kind of on a roll because he had stepped in for his last fight to fill the bill for somebody else. And he actually just shocked everybody that he came in on short notice and beat the guy. And then now he comes in the next fight, he gets leveled. And there was a little bit of controversy on this one because Brenneman fell back after the head kick and the ref just came right in and stopped it. I mean, it was a bad head kick, don't get me wrong, but basically when he fell back on the ground, he was up on his elbows and he wasn't woozy or anything like that. He pretty much stood right up even as the referee was waving it off. So a few people thought it was a little bit of a hasty decision to stop it, but I stand by the ref's choice because he did get rocked by that kick. And whether he's, you know, woozy or not, he's in that position right there. He's just taking a big hit. He's a little bit in shock. If they prolong the fight and he jumps on top of him and hits him with a, you know, a Superman flying punch through the air and ruins the guy's face when the fight was pretty much over after the kick, I mean, you know, why let it continue when it's pretty much over anyway? So I agree with the ref on that one. But we also had Matt Wyman versus Matt Danzig. Matt won by decision, unanimous decision there. No controversy there. That was actually a rematch, too, between the two of them. And I probably heard it during the broadcast, whoever won the first fight, but I don't remember, so I apologize for that. Then we had another guy that I'm a little bit familiar with from, he's been in the New England circuit there, Eve Edwards. He actually had his last fight. He was horribly knocked out. And I talked about that a lot after that last fight in the UFC there. But he fought Raffaello Oliveira the other night, Saturday, and won by punches in the second round, about 244 mark there. We also had one of the Ultimate Fighter winners a few seasons ago, Michael Johnson, had his first loss in the UFC by heel hook submission to Paul Fass, who I never heard of, so that kind of surprised me. Mike Easton beat Byron Bloodworth by TKO, knees and punches, and that was the second round, about almost 8 seconds from the final bell. Actually, not the final bell, but the ending bell. Then we had TJ Grant beat Chain Roller by armbar submission in the third round, 212 mark. And I don't know if this was a preliminary fight, but they brought Josh Neer back, who hasn't been around for a little while. And he fought Keith Wisniewski on the preliminary cards. He won by doctor stoppage, TKO after the second round was done. And then finally we had Wallell Watson beat Joseph Sandoval by TKO in the first round, 117 mark. And then the big fight this weekend is going to be in Houston, Texas. They got a big UFC expo going on, too, down there. That's in coordination with it the whole weekend, I think. And the main event there is Gray Maynard in a rematch versus Frankie Edgar. And these guys pretty much had an epic fight the last time. and it's actually been postponed once already. They're supposed to have already happened, but they both ended up having injuries at the same time, which is unheard of, but it happened. And now it's going to be this weekend, October 8th, Saturday. And the last fight, like I said, was pretty intense. They basically went in there toe-to-toe. Frankie Edgar is probably the best boxer in MMA right now. And he just completely changed his game from being a pure wrestler and, you know, doing a lot of submission moves, and went into the boxing hardcore, and he started to really make headway with that style. And, yes, he has the lightweight championship belt. Ray Maynard almost got it away from him, but they ended up scoring the fight a draw in the last fight. And actually, I thought it was pretty accurate. There might have been some people that would complain, but Ray Maynard came on strong early in that fight, and then Frankie Edgar responded well. Frankie got rocked late in the fight, and everybody thought he was done, you know. And he was wobbling all over the ring, running in circles, and just messed up. And he just sucked it up somehow and drove on and just kept going and finished the fight. And looked competitive through the rest of the way. So it showed his heart. It showed his chin, I guess. His endurance in the ring. And it was a good fight. So I'm sure this one's going to be no different. Although I would think that Maynard is going to be trying a lot harder for the knockout, and Edgar is probably a completely different fighter than what he was back then. So I'm sure he's learned a lot from that fight, and both guys have probably improved quite a bit. It's going to be a war. And the other fight that's the co-main event on this one that makes this fight really good, this whole fight card, we have Jose Aldo fighting Kenny Florian. And Jose Aldo, I always tell people, he's the guy that made sure that I never got into MMA. He's so vicious, and he's a little guy. And if a guy like that can do what he did to Cub Swanson in 18 seconds, then that's not a sport for me. I definitely do not want that to happen to me. I'll take a left hook knockout any day in boxing to what happened to that kid. But anyway, Kenny Florian is new to the featherweight division and just moved down. Looked pretty impressive. He was struggling a little bit in the lightweights. So now he's down in weight class, and this is going to be a good fight. This is probably going to be Jose Aldo's toughest challenge, because even though he's beat a lot of great featherweights, they're mostly guys that came through the WEC. And Kenny's going to be the first real UFC guy that he faces. So I think it's going to be a good fight. And I still like Jose to win, but you know, you can never underestimate a guy like Kenny Florian. And no matter what happens, I think it's going to go all the way. It's going to go the distance. But we shall see. Also on this card, we have Kenny Florian's buddy, Joe Lazon, fellow Massachusetts native.
That's my friend, Mike Spider.
Yeah, he's a very well-liked guy. Just really, once we popularity.
I'll tell you, when we interviewed Joe a couple of years ago, and I was telling my friend Mike about it, and I was like, yeah. But Mike watches a lot of UFC, and I think he was like, "You want to kill us on?" He's like, "He's my favorite fighter, really." And I was like, "Hey, look, you know, how was he? Was he cool?" I'm like, "Dude, he was really cool." I said, "One of the nicest guys we've had on." I said, "He was happy to answer any questions." I said, "But yeah, he's my favorite fighter. I like him because he has big ears like me. I call him Joey Ears." My friend's like, "Nobody knows more about big ears than I do."
Yeah. Well, he might get his big ears punched against Melvin Guillard here. He's the nickname is the Young Assassin, and his record is pretty impressive for MMA. In such a young sport. He's got a record of 29-8-2. So he's looking for win number 30 in this one if he can get it against Joe. This is going to be another good fight, you know. Just hands down, a really great card. And really, Joe's going to have his hands full on this one, because he's fighting a guy who not only has such a good record, but he's won his last five fights in a row. all of them UFC fights dating back to the UFC 109. The last guy he lost to was Nate Diaz back on September of 2009, UFC Fight Night 19. So this is going to be a tough one. He's beat some big guys, too, since then. Evan Dunham being probably the best among them. That was this past January. And Joe's going to have a tough test here. I think he can pass it, but it's going to be a close one. And then we have the War Hero versus the Mouth. Chael Sonnen versus Brian Stann. And Chael is just everybody's favorite guy to hate in the sport of MMA. He had the situation with his test coming back positive for too much testosterone. He came out and he said that it was on the understanding that he had a medical exemption when he really didn't. He got busted. They took his license in California away to fight because of his statements to the commission that were found to be untruthful. And then he ended up also getting in trouble with the law legally because of a deal where he had some relative's company come in and then bill for work that was never done on a house that he was selling. So that got him into some hot water, and the UFC pretty much put him up for a long while. And, of course, you know, because he can't fight with his hands and his, you know, kicks and knees and all that, he's going to use his mouth to get attention these days. And this, since he's been on the break from the UFC, he's just been just targeting everybody, really. I mean, the whole country of Brazil pretty much hates him at this point because he's badmouthed so many Brazilian fighters and Brazil itself so many times. So I'm really hoping Brian pulls this one off, not to mention, you know, the fact that he's a military guy, he takes care of the war heroes, and he's big with the charities that help out the veterans and stuff, so definitely.
That's the thing, like, I never got to really sit down and talk to Brian Stann. You know, I talked to his wife about trying to get him on the show with us. And even as she said to me when I was, you know, I haven't talked to his wife in a couple of years, pretty much ever since I got rid of MySpace, because that's where I was, you know, friends with her. And the way I became friends with her, it was actually almost funny. I was at Eagles training camp the one year, because I go every year, and Eagles cheerleaders were there. I was getting a photo with them, and she happened to be one of them. She happened to be one of them. Get a photo. And a couple, you know, months later, I'm doing an interview, an interview, and, you know, with this one paper, I send that photo in, I'm wrong, that happened actually, I was going to an Eagles, function. If I met her in August of 2005, I was going to an Eagles function in, April of, like, 2006. And I had some photos with me that I had blown up from, like, training camps and stuff like that, hoping to get autographs. That picture of me and the two girls being one of them. So, you know, she's walking by. I'm like, excuse me, would you mind signing this photo for me? And she got in very nice touch. She comes over, and she looks at him, and she goes, and I'm like, yeah, that's some training camp relations. She goes, oh, that's so cool. And I had my boxing glove earring on. You got the cool earring, and I'm like, yeah. And she goes, you in the boxing? I said, yeah. And she's like, yeah, my fiance is like a mixed martial artist. I'm like, yeah. I actually read about in the paper how he proposed to you on the 50-yard line of the game. I said, because at the time when I was auditioning for the Rocky movie, they had it was like a Rocky article was in one section, like right there, and right below it was a picture of Brian Stann proposing on the 50-yard line. So as I'm reading the Rocky stuff, I'm like, oh, there's the girl I met at training camp. So I was talking to her. She goes, yeah, he's a professional mixed martial artist. I'm like, yeah, I was reading that. And I'm like, so, you know, I started talking to her. And this was a year before I started, you know, being on the show, you know, writing for Fighting is Unlimited. This was like a year before I had any association with the show. But what she had said to me was, she goes, listen, she goes,
look me up on MySpace, because I don't think Facebook was invented yet. Look me up on MySpace and please send me that photo from training camp. So I did. And then I would talk to her from here and there, and I'd say, hey, you know, wish your husband like the best in his fight coming up and whatever. And this is when he was still fighting in WEC.
Right.
And then next thing I know, I'm like a year later, I'm writing for Fight News Unlimited, and a matter of months after that, I'm co-hosting the show. And I'm like, yeah, we'd love to get your husband on, you know, talk to him, interview him. And she's like, yeah, that'd be cool. I'll talk about it. She goes, he's a guy, you know, he's not really always comfortable talking about stuff like that. And I'm like, we'd love to have him on. I said, you know, obviously I'll respect that. If he doesn't want to do it, you know, that's his prerogative. But I'd love to have him on, you know. And the one thing I would always say to him, I said, you know, obviously doing very well. He did very well in WEC. He's, you know, doing very well in UFC. I said, I would have loved to have seen him try his hand at straight up boxing. I said, shit, I would train him.
The way these UFC guys are turning around this, you know, different points and telling the boss that they're going to switch to boxing, you know, he might be one of those guys too.
Well, the thing, look at it this way. Let's talk about money, right? The whole issue of the game is being making money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, look at it like this. Okay, you got a guy here that obviously has a lot of natural punching power. I mean, I watched him win the WBC title, knocking a guy out with one single left hook. I think it's the first six or seven fights were all first round knockouts. So the guy's got punching power. But what you have to train him on how to do is, you know, the standard skills of boxing, you know. You know, you got to, like, throw in combinations, balance, flipping, flipping punches, blocking punches, all stuff like that. You train him that. Then you teach him how to be a traditional boxer. But on the other end, let's talk about making the money part of it. Because, you know, that's the name of the game is making money. You got this guy. He is a U.S. war hero. You know, how they said, like, how he, saved many of the fellow Marines over in Iraq, you know, and he's like, you know, I don't want to talk to you because I was just doing my duty. So you got this guy, he's all American, he's a war hero. Well, you know what? Right now, the heavyweight title is in the hands of two Ukrainians. Basically, even though, you know, they're not our enemies anymore like they were 30 years ago, still, Ivan Drago has the heavyweight championship of the world. Ivan Drago and his twin brother have the heavyweight championship of the world. Let's look at the American war hero. You know, let's look at the American war hero, the red, white, and blue guy. All American, go out there and regain the championship of the world for his country. Dude, you know how much money that would make?
Yeah. Well, you have to go a long way, though, to get to that point.
He would have to go a very long way. But you look at it, that's the marketing tool that you'd want to build up.
Right.
It's all marketing. Remember, you got to remember, Rich, I was an advertising guy. I mean, I was a journalism teacher, but my whole focus on journalism was not just the writing. I mean, I think I'm a pretty good writer. But my main focus was advertising and public relations.
Well, you probably won't get to write about Brian Stan in boxing, but the latest guy to say that he does want to go into boxing, though, is Rampage Jackson, who actually works with an Irish boxing coach, and he does look pretty decent when he works the pads at boxing, you know, but I think he's like... He's not looking into it too much. He's just jumping head first into it. And, he's actually already set up a charity boxing match. And even though it's charity, I kind of thought, with one fight still left on his contract, I thought that was kind of crazy that he would even be talking about it. But he set up a charity match with, Meta World Peace, Ron Artest. And, I didn't read exactly when it's going to happen, but I just read the headline the other day that they're going to fight. So we'll see how good he is there, but actually we won't see how good he is because Ron Artest is not a boxer. And As we found out from Dancing with the Stars, not a very good dancer either.
That's what I heard.
He's like the first guy to get thrown off. But anyway, back to the card. We got Stan, who is 11-3. And the last time he lost was to Phil Davis back in February of 2010. So it's been a while. He's beaten some pretty decent guys since then. Mike Vincenzo, Chris Lieben, and Jorge Santiago were his last three wins, all by stoppages, one submission, and two TKOs. And I don't know whether he's at the same level of expertise and skill as Chael Sonnen, but you cannot underestimate Brian Park with this MMA stuff, you know. He just goes in there and he fights like a bastard, so. And he trains, that's his training, you know. And I can understand the whole aspect of not wanting to talk about it, you know. It's like, that's the hero mentality. That's what makes people heroes in the first place, is the fact that they're selfless enough to not worry about how people think about them, you know. They're worried about the other people. They're out there fighting alongside. So, more power to him. I definitely want him to win this fight. If I had to predict it, I don't know if I'd go with him, but I definitely would not underestimate him if I was going in as Chael Sonnen. So, we'll see about that one. But we also have Jeremy Stephens versus Anthony Pitts on this card. Another fight that was epic and got involved in some controversy, like the main event. It was Namfan versus Leonard Garcia in their first fight, and there's going to be a rematch on this card. And this was a fight I talked about a couple weeks ago that actually was bumped up to the main card from the preliminaries. And I kept saying, I don't know why you would do that. You know, why you would even put that fight on the preliminaries. People want to see that. That decision be avenged. So hopefully Nam has changed the game up a little bit and he can deal with the constant output of Garcia and score a little more points in this one. Jeremy Stephens versus Anthony Pettis should be a good fight. Stephens has been kind of up and down a little bit, and Pettis is on just a roller coaster ride, just doing unbelievable things in the sport. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one. And the fight was a loss to Clay Guida, but before that, he had four wins in a row against some pretty big guys, including Ben Henderson, where he introduced the Showtime kick, which was pretty much he ran up against the fence, came off the fence, and kicked the guy in the face. So basically, he just, you know, like if you're trying to do a backflip off a wall. He did one of those moves, but he went sideways up the fence with one foot. Came off and kicked him. It was unbelievable. But anyway. Also, we got Demian Maia versus Jorge Santiago. Spike Miocic versus Joey Beltran. Steve Kinnell versus Mike Vincenzo. And Aaron Simpson versus Eric Schaefer. And finally, Tiquan Zhang versus Darren Elkins on that card. And I'm looking forward to it. I think that's going to be one that's not going to allow me to lose interest in any of these fights and not watch intently. So, should be good. There was some talk, finally, of getting John Jones and Rashad Evans to fight at UFC 140. So I don't have the date right in front of me, but it's I think it's coming up before the end of the year here. And now that Dana White has come out and said that that's not going to happen, so we'll have to hold our applause on that one. We don't know what's going to happen there. But other than that, it's really not a whole heck of a lot going on in the MMA circles. I didn't really get a chance to do too much research on the big stories this week. And crazy busy doing my tours thing for once. You know, I've been in Vegas since February. We have Mark Coleman coming on in about 7 minutes. So we'll just see what we can figure out here. Do you have any big boxing events coming up this weekend?
Well, I'm going to talk about fights from last weekend real quick. First of all, the one fight I did not get to see, I didn't hear about, was the highway robbery that a former guest of ours, Stephen Cunningham, endured over in Germany against, how's his name, Juan Pablo Hernandez or something like that. I didn't get to see it. I was following it online. Cunningham got knocked down and pretty badly shaken in the first round. He got up and for the next few rounds started putting pretty good shellacking on Hernandez. Obviously, like I said, I wasn't seeing it, but I was following what I was following on tape. It was, from what they said, a pretty good shellacking. They said, if the fight went six rounds, Hernandez won the first 10-8, and Cunningham won the next five. I guess there was a headbutt or two in there that caused a couple cuts around Hernandez's eyes. So they stopped the fight, they go to the cards. The judges have Hernandez winning and becoming the new cruiserweight champion of the world.
What?
So upon reading it, I'm reading a lot of, but I'm not reading, Philadelphia guys saying, oh, Cunningham at Rods or whatever. I'm reading other boxing, Facebook pages. I think the one's called, Bragging Rights or whatever. I can't remember who it was. But I'm reading it, and there's, whoever had Hernandez winning five rounds ought to be shot. To make things even screwier, the Cunningham camp came out and said, the doctor who stopped the fight the whole time was consulting with Hernandez's corner. Obviously should not be happening. And then they said, the Hernandez camp actually asked for the fight to be stopped. The cuts were really, they could have gotten worse. Yeah. Any cut can get worse. And here's the thing, though. Rich, two guys are fighting, and they have an accidental clash of heads. And the guy gets a small, little 1 millimeter nick over his eye caused by a headbutt. The next round, the guy blasts him with the right hand and opens that nick to a 3-inch gully that's gushing blood. They stop the fight. That's caused by an accidental headbutt.
Mm-hmm.
So either it would be a technical draw, or if it passes so many rounds, it would go to the cards. So the Hernandez camp is now trying to counter the Cunningham allegations, saying that the referee unfairly gave Cunningham a long count in the first round, and he was down for 14 seconds. I didn't see it. I can't answer it. But that's what the call. That's what the argument is. There was also a fight card on HBO Saturday night. The first fight was a rematch between Indy Lee, good young prospect, being trained by Emmanuel Stewart, and the only man who's ever beaten him, Brian Vera. Vera had stopped Lee a couple years ago. Lee came back pretty strong. He beat Vera pretty convincingly, won pretty much every round, knocked him down one or two times. I think it was twice, but I really don't remember. Won a commanding 10-round decision. The main event was Sergio Martinez against a very, unknown Darren Barker. Did not get to see the fight. I wasn't feeling that well, and I fell asleep by that time. But Martinez won. They said, Barker held his own. Martinez didn't look great. And he did stop him in the 10th round.
Just breaking up the schedule now, see what we can come up with quick here as far as what's going on this weekend. What's the big deal about this weekend? We shall see. Yeah, unfortunately, for Cunningham, the fights that you take overseas like that are always risky. For when you try to protest after the fight. That's the way it goes. But the way it sounds that both guys are pissed, then maybe they ought to have a rematch mandated. if they could get that out of something, then that would be good. Still doesn't help the fact that he's got a loss on his record he doesn't deserve.
Yep.
What can you do? No, it's not a spectacular fight, but tomorrow night there's a fight up at the Shaw Conference Center in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, between a couple of heavyweights, Ty Fields, who's 48-4 with 43 knockouts, fighting Raphael Butler, who's 35-10-28.
I don't think Ty Fields is fighting after that last knockout he just suffered a few months ago.
Well, this guy's got 10 losses, so it might be kind of a tune-up fight for him. Who knows? I haven't heard of the guy. I heard of Ty Fields, but this other guy. Let's see what else we got. But a couple undefeated guys fighting each other actually out here at the arch rival that I have here, in the Zion's case, the casino owners, the Casitas, they started having fights over at Texas Station Casino, one of their out-of-the-way casinos out near the mountains. And they actually already had one card out here since I've been here. I don't know if they've done it before that, but they have another one put on by Gold Boy Promotions tomorrow night. And I think it's going to be on Showtime. Yeah, Showtime. United States Showtime says. And the main event there is a couple light heavyweights who are undefeated. Sharif Bogaer, who's 20-0 with 12 knockouts, fighting Francisco Contreras, who's 16-0 with 13 knockouts. And then there's an 8-round light middleweight fight between Jermell Charlo, who's 15-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Francisco Santana, who is 12-2 with 1 draw, 6 knockouts. And there's a really big card at the Twin River Event Center tomorrow, in Lincoln, Rhode Island, but there's actually only one big fight on. It's not really that big of a fight. Vladim Biafi, 11-1, 6 knockouts, is fighting an 8-round super middleweight fight with John Mackey, who's 13-6. It's got 2 draws and 6 knockout wins. But there's about 10 fights on that card. Mostly guys with under 5 or 6 fights. But still, you know, you never know what you can get with a fight like that. Fight card like that, I should say. We got some interesting battles going on in Burbank, Illinois tomorrow at the Club Chicago. Middleweight main event, 12-rounder between Osumanu Agama, who's 19-2, 14 knockouts, fighting Roman Karmazin, who's 40-4 with 26 knockouts and 2 draws to his record. Joe McCready's also in that card. He's 12-5 with 6 knockouts, 2 draws, fighting Lauren Myers, who's 8-12 with 1 draw, 2 knockouts. So then we get into Saturday. Oh, by the way, I got to watch the 48 Hours, the Gotti 48 Hours, and it actually kind of changed my perspective quite a bit. I don't know if you got to see it yet, but if you actually go on Hulu.com, you can find it, and then they bring you right to the show page, I think, from there. It's not actually hosted on Hulu, but they'll bring it to you. And I watched the whole thing, and you know, listening to some of the things that were described by the wife, you know, it adds a little bit more doubt to the situation. I still have suspicions that she had something to do with it, but you know, she seems like, you know, she makes a good argument for herself, believe it or not. That's probably how she was able to get out of the jail in Brazil and clear her name. But you know, the forensic science behind their investigation of the whole thing, and it's all in there. They get all sides of it. They even get a couple people that talk about how Gotti was talking about suicide at different points of his life. And it was a previous suicide attempt, I guess, of him trying to overdose on drugs. So who knows, but it's definitely opens up the mystery a little bit more, and it's definitely a good watch. So if you get a chance to check that out, definitely watch that.
Yeah, no, I definitely will. Very well. I don't know what to say on that one.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely still an open case to me. You know, I'm not going to let it go. In the back of my mind, I'll always work, you know, think about that. But one interesting thing he did say, it was Mickey Ward himself when they were interviewing him, said that, talking about the movie The Fighter, because they left the best part out, and that was the fights with Gabby. So,
yeah.
I haven't heard much about the sequel. They are doing a sequel, apparently, but I haven't heard much about any schedule.
The only thing that came was, you know, the link you had sent me a month or two ago.
Yeah. Well, it's about that time. Let me just grab the number here, and we're going to get Mark Coleman on the line. He's a guy who's been around the world in 80 days in more ways than one. He's got an unbelievable record in pride of this, but especially just who he fought. He fought Fedor Emelianenko twice. Fortunately, he lost both times, but, you know, gave him a good fight. He's, one of his first 10 fights, he fought, Dan Severn and beat him, by a neck crank submission in the first round back in 1997. This guy started in the sport in, 96, the year after I got out of high school. So he's a pretty intense character. He's tough as nails, and really, the only reason he retired is just, he actually lost to another guy who retired his last fight, Randy Couture. And that was back in, February 2010. So he's definitely a warrior, just, injuries and aches and pains caught up with him. And if anybody else, download for the movie The Smashing Machine, and it's mostly about a guy named Mark Kerr, who fought in the same circuits as Mark, and Mark is actually in the film, so he talks a lot about the injuries there, even earlier in his career, and I think the movie is at least 5 years old. I don't know exactly how much, but it's definitely another thing. Get him on here. Couple picks. One good thing about the situation here, and I'm in a hotel with wireless internet, so we will have no technical difficulties.
That's good.
Just a little, might be a little slow at times, but we'll get her done. And it's ironic that I'm on the phone with you right now because there's like this gigantic storm just sitting over the mountains that looks like a tornado coming right at the start of the show. I don't know why this is not cooperating now. I jinxed us, I guess. Time to make a phone call. While I'm waiting for that little thing to load up, let's check out Box Trek again. Not much. Had a pretty interesting card over in Argentina on Saturday. A couple 10-rounders, co-main events. First one is a middleweight fight between Billy Facundo Godoy, who's undefeated at 22-0. 12 knockouts, fighting Claudio Ariel Avalos, who's 26-11-3. 6 knockouts to his credit. Welterweights, Juan Alberto Godoy, 25-13 with 1 draw, 10 knockouts. and Luis Gustavo Sosa, 31-20, with 3 draws and 10 knockouts. So those two guys must be brothers. One's a welterweight, one's a middleweight. The Godoy brothers. That must be pretty interesting, being co-main events on the same card there. As bros. Well, I know we haven't done it in a while, but I really think I found a mismatch week here. We got Mike Alguet, who's 31-38, with 13 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Joseph Sovigis, who is 2-54. And he's been knocked out 25 times. He has 2 draws.
Wow.
It's a rough record. Pardon the delay, we're just trying to get Mark's phone number in the system here, get this started. For why? It's not being cooperative. There we go. Alright. Still taking its time. Computer. Alright, well, still waiting on this thing to catch up to. We got the WBO flyweight title on the line in the Philippines this weekend, too. Johnny Nietes, who's 28-1 with 16 knockouts, 3 draws, fighting Ramon Garcia Jarales, who's 16-2-1. Finally, Mark Coleman's in the system. And yes, you can call him. Let's go. Alright. Also on that same card with the WBO light flyweight title, right in here, we got a bantamweight fight between AJ Bernal, who's 25-1-1, 19 knockouts, fighting Mario Briones, who is 20-0-1, with 14 knockouts. Saturday as well over in Spain. That's Saul Roman.
Hello,
Mark.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. Mike Hughes Unlimited. How's it going?
I couldn't hear your name. What'd you say again?
It's Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
Rich Bergeron?
Bergeron.
First of all, nice to meet you. How you doing, buddy?
Great. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line with us tonight.
Yo, what's up?
Well, what's up, man?
Well, we heard you have this MMA Adventure Company prize package here that you're involved in. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, are we on air right now, or are we talking about it now, or what?
Yep, we're live. We got a live radio show.
We're live. I didn't know we were live. So, I got a call from a company, but a couple weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, called MMA Adventure, and they're offering two fans, all expenses weekend paid, to Las Vegas on Halloween weekend, and basically they get to hang out with me for the weekend. So, kind of interesting for me and kind of interesting for the fans. You know, how do you get into this? You gotta go to MMAAdventure.com and, purchase a $5 voucher, which, gets $10 off, MMA Elite, gear, which is, they're my sponsors. So you buy a $5 voucher, you get $10 off a purchase from MMA Elite, and you're automatically, entered into the, drawing to win the vacation to Vegas or hang out Halloween weekend with me. And, I'll do my best to make whoever wins happy. It's a big weekend, a big fight weekend, Halloween weekend. There should be plenty of things to do, shouldn't there?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's the one thing I didn't see on the story about it. What exactly you have in store? Is that supposed to be a surprise or?
What do I have in store? What do I have in store for what we'll be doing this weekend?
The prize weekend, yeah. Whoever wins the prize, what are you going to have them doing?
Well, there's a lot of options. And, I guess it's kind of up to me what we do, I'm more than willing to talk to the fan and see what he wants to do, or he or she. I don't know who's going to win or who's going to win it's going to be two people. It's up to me what we do, but I'm certainly, I'll listen to their input, whatever they want to do. I Halloween weekend in Vegas with a huge fight that night. Obviously we have plenty of options to choose from. And right now I don't know what we're going to do, but we'll have it figured out by the time that night comes.
Cool. I also have been following you for a long time in the MMA fight game there. I was just talking earlier about how I saw you in the movie Smashing Machine with Mark Kerr, talking about how rugged of a life it is to be a fighter. And tell us a little bit about that, how through your career you were able to get through those times with all those injuries and the difficult times.
Wow, you're talking about a long time ago with Mark Kerr, the Smash Machine. That was, they filmed 500 hours of footage and, they turned it into a hour and a half movie. So basically they make the story, the way they want it to. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't real. It was very real, obviously, but that's the path that he took, and being a fighter, it's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, it's a great life, it's a dream life. I mean, if you're scared and afraid to fight, well, then find something else to do. If not, you train harder, and that's how you deal with these fears, is you train hard, you build your confidence, you get good, and you come back and you kick some butt. And the movie was, it wasn't a movie, it was a documentary, and it was real, but, really, 500 hours of footage, you've seen an hour and a half of what was actually filmed.
Right. Well,
Well, it's interesting. I've never heard that before, but now that I know, it adds a little bit of intrigue to it. But one question I like to ask every fighter.
For Mark Kern to open his life up like that to the people, that's really, that took a lot of nuts and guts from him. Not many people would do that, and certainly it made for an interesting movie, but, who's really going to show all those things? Nobody. So it was definitely a unique documentary, and it won't be, it won't be copied, because I don't see somebody, showing that kind of stuff. But I'm still friends with Mark Kerr, and I'm, it's a daily battle for everybody to survive out there, and I just wish him the best always.
Yeah, actually, I emailed him for a story at one point, and he got right back to me. He's working at a dealership, a high-end dealership in Arizona right now, so he's doing all right. And it's definitely cool to see him come around and put his life back together. But back to you, you've obviously had a ton of fights, and one thing I like to ask every fighter to get on here is what was your toughest fight so far in your career?
Oh, toughest fight. I've been beat plenty of times, but the toughest fight would be, one of my good friends, and we hated each other for a long time, but we became friends. UFC 10, Don Fry. The sport just began, and I was learning how to fight. He was learning how to fight, and I was amazed. And you'll never see another fight like that again because of what had stopped it, a long time earlier. And during the fight, I was hoping they would stop this fight. But back then, you had to tap out to win. And basically, I couldn't believe the heart and the desire and the toughness in this guy because, I got him pretty good. I'm not saying that was my night, head touch for Ligo, I was on, I'm looking at the guy's face, and he's not going to quit ever, and thank God finally Big John stepped in and stopped that one, because, I wasn't really happy with what was going on, and that's why obviously they have changed the rules, and the sport has evolved and come so far, and the referee is certainly a very critical piece.
Right.
Very critical piece to this whole puzzle here.
And what would you say was your best moment in the sport?
Best moment? What's my best moment?
Yeah, you get a lot to pick from, sure.
I certainly enjoyed UFC 10, because it was a war. I haven't been in that many wars in my fights. They've either been one fight in my way or the other way, and I was in a couple wars that night. So UFC 10 was was awesome, but at the same time, Osprey, I go all the way up to the Stephen Bonner fight, which is my most recent, and to be able to put a good camp together for the first time in a long time, put it together, get myself ready, and to be the younger guy like that at 44, that was really special to me. A lot to pick from. The Grand Prix was awesome. A lot to pick from. So, what's the next question? What was my worst moment?
No. We don't usually have to ask those questions. But, toughest fight is close enough. Usually, we get either somebody talks about a fight like you had that was really tough against a really game opponent, or we had somebody who talked about a tough loss that was really close,
I could easily name a lot of tough losses, but you know, certainly Randy Couture took my heart and ripped it out. That was most recently. That was a horrible loss. You know, Nogueira, Krokop, you know, these losses, Don Fry's a special guy. I mean, this guy is a legend. He needs to be in the Hall of Fame. The heart and what he showed so many times and I couldn't believe this guy wasn't tapping out or quitting that night. It was amazing to me that somebody fight like that, but that's Don Fry.
Awesome. And I bet you're probably one of the only guys to have a career spanning from UFC 10 all the way to UFC 100 and beyond. That's an incredible resume that you have there. And I noticed you had a ton of fights in Pride here on your record. And I actually was one of the guys that wrote a lot about the real story behind what happened to Pride and, you know, why they killed it and when the UFC took it over and, you know, that whole deal. What was it like for you when all that happened, when you were actually participating with the Pride?
What do you mean when it happened? When they got bought out?
Right. Did you pretty much train to the UFC?
I mean,
or was it difficult?
It was difficult because I had just signed a 3-fight deal with these guys. I just beat Shogun, which wasn't expected. And I for once had a little power with this company. And they assured me, they weren't selling and they weren't selling to nobody. And I signed a nice 3-fight deal with these guys. And a couple months later, they sell to the UFC and basically, I had a 3-fight deal signed, but it was really, it was worthless. Put it in the garbage can. You know, I mean, I had, I sat for a year and a half, waiting and hoping that the UFC was going to eventually give me a shot, and I thought they might, and they did. They entered me into the Hall of Fame, and at the same time, usually when they do that, they offer me a fight with Brock Lesnar. Wow, that would have been a hell of a challenge. Maybe it was a blessing that I did blow my knee out, but who knows? You know, I would have definitely took on that challenge, but eventually I came back and fought Hua, and I'm just so grateful to the UFC for bringing me back after 10 years. That was my goal when I left initially to go to Pride. My goal was to get back to the UFC because that was always the NFL, the big leagues to me. It just took a lot longer than I anticipated, but when I did get back, I'm not too, impressed with the Shogun Rua fight. I did the best I could on the notice that I had or the training that I did do for that fight. It was my own fault, but I got the opportunity against Bonner, and for the first time, I went out to Las Vegas for like 75 days, and I put together a heck of a camp at Randy Couture, Iraq, and the Couture guys, the whole gym took me under their wing, and they got me ready, and that was a special night for me at UFC 100, but then I guess they had me scouted out pretty good because Couture had me scouted out pretty good and he got it better than me. And the worst thing about that is, I can handle losing, but it just kind of really sucks that I didn't even fight back, so it still itches, still bothers me.
Well, knock yourself short. You had a hell of a career record there that most people would just be dreaming to be able to even fight these guys. Never mind, win or lose. Just have the honor to fight. And you fought in a league that had unbelievable, different rules than the UFC. So I imagine that was quite the adjustment after spending all that time under a different system. And then you go back into the UFC and have to deal with that. So. I bet you the door,
well,
loop, right?
You can say that all you want, but my home was in that octagon. I liked it in there. I liked the cage. I didn't particularly like the ring. You know, I went there because of necessity, but a fight's a fight, and it really is. You're right, though. There is a big difference when you got knees on the ground and you don't have knees on the ground. It changes the strategy big time, and there is a lot of strategy involved. But I'm not going to blame nothing on coming back to the cage because I wanted to get back in that cage for a long time, and I really felt comfortable in there. I just whatever. He was a better man that night, so it is what it is. You know, I move on.
Now, what would you say you enjoyed most about mixed martial arts? Now and then, while you were fighting, what did you like most about it? And what do you like about watching it too?
Well, there's just so much to like. I mean, the first time I saw mixed martial arts on when it was called No Holds Barred on TV back in '93, '94, I was immediately obsessed with it. I thought it was the way it was then, I thought it was the most beautiful sport or activity I've ever saw. I had hoped it was real. I loved everything about it. And, you know, being involved with it just, obviously I love to compete. But just the friends I made, the people I've met, the traveling I've been able to do, it just goes on and on. Everything about MMA is amazing, and the way Dana White and the Fertitta brothers and Joe Silva, the way they've been able to take this thing to Fox, this is mainstream. This sport is mainstream now, and to have been a part of it, you know, I'm just humbled and grateful and thankful, and wow. You know, it was just, I was in the right place at the right time, but at the same time, I was a competitor and I did take advantage of it and I won a few belts.
Cool. Now, do you still train at all? Are you, open to at all try to get another fight, or is it, that's it, I'm done doing my own thing? What's the deal with that?
Well, I haven't officially announced no retirement, and it's certainly one of the hardest things for a fighter to do, to say he's done, and then definitely, before the KOTOR fight, you know, I had no anticipations of retiring, win or lose, but some things took place, my manager, I work for MMA Elite, also brand management MMA Elite. My bosses, these guys recommended that maybe it's time to retire, and then all of a sudden Dana White, he cuts you from the UFC, which, in hindsight, I don't have a problem with it, but I didn't expect it at the time, but then all of a sudden, And then all of a sudden the aches and pains start settling in pretty good, you know, because I am, I've been called old for a long time, but yes, I am getting kind of old. So, I don't want to say I won't fight again. I've had a lot of offers over the last year and a half. Nothing that really, yeah, Ken Shamrock, this and that, but some other fights they were given to me on 2 weeks' notice. If the right fight comes up, possibly a Ken Shamrock, who knows? I'm not going to fight John Bones Jones. Are you kidding me? This guy's a savage killer. You know, I'm not going to deny that. I don't want no part of him right now. But if they were going to pay me, I would. I'd take that chance. But these guys are amazing. How far they've come and how far this sport has advanced. It's amazing what these guys can do, but I do get offers from overseas and this and that, and I do still work out, you know, but not like a champion, but I still work out, but if I did get the right offer, maybe I could turn it up and, and maybe get back in there. But hopefully I can avoid that because, I don't like to see what's happening to a lot of these guys. I don't want to be one of those guys going out getting, KO'd for a little bit of cash.
Yeah, I hate to say it, one of your opponents, Dan Severn, but, one of his, last few fights I watched, was a kid that I had seen in the New England circuit. And, you know, just a young kid coming up, and, they threw Dan Severn in with him, and, it's a chance of a lifetime for this kid to fight somebody with that kind of a name, and Dan just, kind of went through motions and got knocked out pretty quickly, so.
Oh, well, I tell you what, see, that just makes me sick to hear that because I'm good friends with Dan. We did a seminar together here recently, and he's the most, one of the most busy men on the circuit, but I'm amazed at what he's been able to do. I don't know how he's been able to do it. And, I don't understand how this hasn't happened more often than he's been able to avoid this, but you're telling me, I didn't know this, but he just got knocked out pretty good here recently?
Yeah, a couple months ago, I think, was the fight.
Well, he's
had a couple since then. I mean, he's been busy.
Well, I tell you what, man, the guy, he's a tough guy, and, I think I talked to him since then, and he seems, he hasn't been hit that many times. He does know how to, he does know how to avoid being in a fight and avoid getting, getting plowed. So, if that happened, it happened. But, he's getting to the age where, yes, I'm definitely worried about a Dan Severn. A lot of my buddies, a lot of the guys I fought with back then fighting with paychecks. And, certainly I've been tempted to get in there. But, Dan Severn, this guy's a special guy. How old is he? He's kept himself in great shape. He's probably in better shape than when he fought me back in, 97 or whatever. This guy, he's kept himself in great shape, but unfortunately the competition has gotten so much better as well, so it is dangerous for him to get in there, and I worry about that. I hope he's okay. And, but knowing Dan, he's been trying to get me back in a cage for a long time. This guy's been calling me out for the last 5 years. He wants a rematch with me back in there, and I told him to lose 50 pounds first.
That would be a great comeback fight for you.
I'm not saying it's over, but basically it would probably be better if it was. But really, the issue is always going to be there. I had no intentions of retiring. I thought I was going to fight till I was 50, but then really, the injuries, they start aching a little bit more the older you get, and they're there. The reality is they're there, and they kind of hamper everything you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate a little bit. I've broken a couple ankles in my day, not necessarily in sporting events, but I've taught as a boxer in college, and didn't really get the injury bug there, but I can only imagine what you go through training and actually fighting in an MMA fight. And I've seen guys get pretty busted up and all that, but it's, until you actually live it, you really can't understand what it's like to overcome that situation. It seems like, it's almost like since the implication of the UFC's policy there with the health insurance, these fighters seem to be getting hurt more all the time.
Probably now that they have the insurance there, before they just got hurt. And they avoided going to the doctor because it costs so much money. Now that they have insurance, we're not talking serious injuries here. I don't want to put a bad eye on the sport, but no, there's potential risk every day in practice. But at the same time, when I wrestled, there was potential risk every moment, during your wrestling practice. If not more, than mixed martial arts. So you know, there's risk in every sport, but MMA, these guys got insurance now, so yeah, they're probably using it a little bit more, but, you know, probably, you know, before they kind of hit the injuries, they work through the injuries, you know, I've fought a few times, you know, through some stuff that I probably should have, you know, skipped it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough decision, though, when you got the money getting waved in your face.
Exactly. That's the bottom line, you know, but, yeah, you got bills to pay, your neck's herniated, you got a herniated disc, but you got bills to pay, so, you put your chin down, you go in there, and you give it a try, but really, it's not a fun place to be, you know, when you're injured, or when now, especially the pace that these guys set is, it's just amazing the conditioning that they have, and if you get in there with less than 100%, even if you're 100%, you might lose because some guys are just a lot natural, better conditioned, or you know, have better coaches, this and that. But a lot of times, it's reminding me of the Olympic wrestling. The guy, you know, the better shaped guy wins. You know, the guy in better shape's winning because these guys are so equally, you know, competitive. They're so equally, you know, comparable, and so who works harder, who can push the pace the hardest, you know, a lot of times you're going to win. And that's especially going to be true this weekend. Gray Maynard, he had your two of the best conditioned guys ever in the business. I can't wait for this one.
Yeah, I'm excited for the whole card. I mean, it's just, it's
the whole card, yeah.
Because there's a couple boxing guys on the card there, too, and you know, that's where I first started covering MMA, and that's where I grew up. So I always like to see Joey Lozon and Kenny Florian go in there. And, they've got some good opponents at this time around that I'm actually worried if whether they're going to win, you know.
Well, it's a great card, but, you know, I love seeing heavyweights on there, but for lack of a heavyweight or a light heavyweight being on there, It's just a great card. Joe Silver and the whole UFC staff just took this sport and you know, just did an amazing job how far they brought this and continue to take it. This happened to be a small part of it.
Now, have you noticed over the years, as the UFC has evolved, the styles of fighting changing because of, you know, aspects like the bonuses and stuff like that? Because it seems to me like the more fights I watch, the more these guys are moving towards striking and being exciting and, you know, trying to avoid getting thrown out if they lose, you know. At least they put on a hell of a fight so they don't get thrown out. It just seems to me like there's the pressure and the benefit of getting these bonuses that's kind of changes so that these guys tend to avoid being on the ground a little bit more, depending on their style, of course. But have you seen that, or do you notice anything else worth mentioning about the way it's changed?
Well, I think you brought up a great point. The styles have changed, and quite possibly, well, for sure, the offer of bonuses, you know, has added to the style change. But what I think happened, and what a lot of people were complaining about, you know, not too long ago, was that there was just too much wrestling, too much wrestling, taking a guy down, and these wrestlers were taking guys down and ground and pounding and dominating, and people were saying they need to change the rules, this and that. But I always felt it was just a matter of time before it would equal itself out, and that's what happened. Is everybody, you know, yes, everybody wants the bonus money, but still people want wins first. But what happened is it's a lot harder to take people down because wrestling has been prevalent now for 15 years, and people have learned how to wrestle. Maybe they haven't become offensive wrestlers, but you know, they've learned how to stop the takedown, which keeps the fight on the feet. And I do agree with you. Yes, striking has become so much more important now because because people can't get these takedowns. But if they got a chance to get the takedown, they'll take it because the win is the most important. But guys have become so good. There's coaches out there. There's camps out there now. These guys have been, they've had experience, you know, professional coaches teaching them how to wrestle and stop the takedown, this and that. And it's not so easy to get a takedown. And at the same time, once you do see a takedown, how many times do you see a guy back on his feet within 10 seconds? It's just so hard, to hold a guy down as well. Jiu-jitsu is, you know, I'm not saying nothing about jiu-jitsu, but there's not very many submissions holds. There's not very many submissions anymore these days, unless the guy is a super, super freak. You know, it's because you must know how to stop these things, but people have learned how to stop the submission holds. They've learned how to avoid them. So jiu-jitsu right now is right now on, it's not as important as wrestling and striking. I consider them both about equal, but striking has really, really stepped up because, you know, there's a lot more or less takedowns now, and these guys, you know, they're throwing bombs and they're throwing punches and they're working on their striking and all these guys. That's what I'm impressed with all these wrestlers, how good they've gotten in stand-up. It just shows what kind of athletes they are. Obviously, I'm a little biased towards wrestlers, but, you know, everybody's great out there. You know, the things Anderson Silva can do, Lyoto Machida can do, these things, you know, this is when I first walked into the cage, I saw Morty Hornstein, a world champion karate guy. And I remember one of the thoughts going through my head was, holy, does he have some kind of flying, spinning back kick that he's going to plow me with? You know what I mean? It was just, you know, kind of going through my head. And at the time, nobody was, you know, luckily that didn't happen. I double-legged him and I began the start of the ground and pound series. But 15 years later, we got guys doing flying front kicks, knocking people out. It's just amazing.
Cool. Well, we just got our 90-second warning there, so we're going to have to do a little sign-off here shortly. But before then, just let us know, is there anybody out there you want to thank or say hello to, or anything you've got going on outside the ring that you want to promote right now other than this MMA adventure?
We cut me short here, but just thank everybody. I haven't done much talking, but just click on the WMMAAdventure.com and buy a voucher and win your trip to Vegas. And check out MMA League, my sponsor. They're sponsoring this adventure, and we'll hang out Halloween weekend out in Vegas, and I'm sure we'll have a good time.
All right, thanks. It's been great talking to you, and really enjoyed it, and look forward to following this whole contest and seeing how it develops. And I'm actually out here in Vegas myself, so maybe if I'm around that weekend, I'll give you a call and do an update.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right. Rich, I guess we ain't got much time, so I'm out, dude.
All right. Or I'm around the Rich Brother on signing off, folks. Till next week. Adios.